What kind of armor did they have on the Battle of Britain?
The Spitfire had a lot of different options in the wing. This particular airplane has two 20-millimeter cannons and four 303 machine guns in it. The Hurricane has, as you can see, there's six sides of 12 303s in it, but they modified the airplanes throughout the year for different roles for tank busting, and they mounted cannon on them and stuff. The wing on this Spitfire is called a universal wing or a C wing, and it could be changed out to have four 20-millimeter cannon, or it could have 50 calibers in it, or all 303s.
Well, did they have different armor during the Battle of Britain, or did they all have machine guns? Or what?
Well, Battle of Britain and Mark IX wasn't out yet. So
yeah, right.
It would have been what Mark V would have been, Ray?
Up to the five, yeah.
Yeah, and so were they all 303s, or they had cannon on the Mark V too, didn't they?
I think it was after the Battle of Britain.
It was after the Battle of Britain, okay. So it was probably all 303s.
Well, how about the Hurricane?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Yeah. Which, when you look at the amount of guns in the Hurricane, it obviously had a little more firepower if you were using the small machine gun.
So tell us about it. Go through a typical mission that they would have during the Battle of Britain.
Well, I think during the actual battle, they laid next to the airplanes, and the airplanes were ready to launch. If I was going to tell about a typical mission, I'd love to tell a story about a guy that we met from the RCAF that went over and flew with the English, and he was there shortly after the Battle of Britain. But they would sit on alert in the airplanes, warmed up with them shut off in the airplane. And when he said they were on a coastal town, and FW-190s would come across without drop tanks, and they'd have two 500-pound bombs on them, and they would bomb the coastal towns because that's as far as they could get before they had to turn around and go back. And they built the Mark IX to chase the later model 190s, but at this time he was in a Mark V, and he said it wouldn't quite keep up with the 190. So he and his wingmen are sitting on the ground waiting, and they call and say there's two 190s coming in. So they scramble off and catch the 190s as they're about ready to drop their bombs. So the 190s drop the bombs, and the wingmen shot down the 190 wingman, and Barry Needham started chasing the other guy across the channel. And he said, I had it wide open, war emergency power, and he was starting to get away from me a little bit, and I didn't have enough gas to turn around and go back if I went any further. So at that time, he said, I just kind of pulled the nose up and squeezed the trigger on the 20s, and I saw a puff of smoke come off the 190, but I had to leave. So he turned around and went back, and he said, I wrote up my report and said I claimed damage to a 190. Well, that entire episode took 20 minutes, and he was out of gas when he got back, but he was wide open throttle the whole time, so he used everything he had. Years later, he was in contact with somebody, ends up that the guy that he hit, he shot him down. He didn't know it until 1970, and somebody called him and said, hey, we found out that you actually shot the guy down. You can add him to your kill list. And the guy lived, but he was killed on the Eastern Front in Russia later on, but his brother's alive. So they got together, and his brother was running a hostel in Austria, and they ended up meeting each other in the 90s. And Barry said he walked into this hostel, and the guy said, just a minute, I have something for you. And he ran upstairs, and he came down with a plaque with a 20-millimeter bullet on it and said, you gave this to my brother. I'm giving it back to you. that's kind of a description, I think, of how they operated the airplanes.
Well, now, you fly this airplane. You also fly the Hurricane. And, Manny, you fly both of them also, right? With that, is that the only two people that fly both airplanes?
Well, this is Bernie, you know? Bernie Vasquez. He's our director of maintenance, but he also flies all of our airplanes with the Dakota Territory Air Museum. He's been with the group now for ten years.
Something like that.
Yeah. He's a young guy, but he's a pretty talented individual, so I couldn't get this done without him. And it really helps to have your director of maintenance be talented in all the airplanes, because when there's something wrong, you can say, go fly it, figure out what's wrong, and fix it. You know, so he flies all the airplanes that we have in the museum, and he's flown. He's qualified to do air shows in both airplanes, so he's got quite a bit of experience in both.
But Warren, are you two guys the only two people around that fly both airplanes?
I fly both
types of airplanes.
I'm sure the museum, the Yeggins Museum, has guys that are flying both airplanes and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Hinton.
Yeah. You know exactly. Yeah.
Steve flies both and can fly both.
Well. In any event, compare this airplane versus that airplane. I'm heard, extremely you must have surprised. Heard that, we just, you heard that a thousand times.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to talk about. I mean, I'm really happy to be here, and thanks to all of you for taking the time to come and listen to this stuff. But Ray built the Hurricane originally. He restored it. It was recovered in 1971 from a swamp in Newfoundland, by Gander, Newfoundland, where it had crashed in 1944 with an engine failure. The pilot survived that ditch and walked out of it, and Ray was involved in the original rebuild and this last one also, and he just finished it about a month ago, so we picked it up. And honestly, you know, I read a lot of books about the Battle of Britain, extremely interested in it, was anxious to fly it, but didn't expect a lot out of the airplane. I thought, well, everybody kind of downplays a Hurricane. The Spitfire, as one of Ray's friends, Gary, said, the Spitfire was the prom queen and this was the 4-H queen. You know, and it was, so I didn't really expect a whole lot out of the airplane. And when I flew it the first time, I was very pleasantly surprised. Yes, the Spitfire is a little more nimble. It's a little bit faster, but the Hurricane is very close and it's robust and it's a nice flying airplane and performs remarkably well.
But now both these airplanes were created within a few years of each other, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about the structure or tell us about the structure of this particular airplane, why that they have the fabric on it.
Yeah, there's the guy that built it.
There's the guy that built it.
He can talk to you about enclosed streamlined flying wire. I don't understand him.
And that's Ray Middleton, by the way.
Back in the day when they were ready to build monoplex fighters,
Ray, hold it a little closer.
Hold the mic close to your mouth.
Okay, you how's
go.
That?
There you go.
Yeah.
So back in the day, in the early 30s, when they were trying to build monoplane fighters, the methodology that Hawkers had hailed from the day of World War I and the 1920s, biplanes and flying wires and fabric. And the obvious for the designer of this airplane was Sidney Cam, who incidentally also designed the Hawker Hunter, which is quite a contrast. He was also responsible for a lot of their biplanes. But I think they just took the methodology back then, which was steel tubes braced with streamlined wires and to keep the box section straight. And then they clipped on wooden formers and covered them with fabric. So it was an obvious transference to this, to use the systems they had. And indeed, the early Hurricanes had fabric wings also. If you look at the little tail wheel on this, it's the identical tail wheel that was used on some of the Hawker biplanes. So it's just a case of using what they had to get this thing in the air. Does that answer it?
That's some of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think, I'd like to add a little bit to, you know, Ray, he and his team did a beautiful job of restoring the airplane. And later on, we'll probably unfasten a panel, but if you look behind the cockpit, you'll see panels that are actually constructed of wood with fasteners, quick detach fasteners and fabric, so you can get in and work on it. And they're, you know, that thick and lightweight, very lightweight, and probably very easily repairable during the war. They could change that stuff out. You said that some of the airplanes even flew with one metal wing and one fabric wing, so they were just a different type of construction. Any other people from England in here? Any other British people? So I just, one guy up
there's
there.
Right,
so I have two people to pick on, you and Ray. You can look at the airplane and see that it doesn't look extremely streamlined. It doesn't have a retractable tail wheel, neither does the Spitfire. It does, however, have a retractable step to get in and out of the airplane. I don't understand that whole theory. And there's things
Hawker did that throughout all of their World War II production, and I was told, I used to work in a shop that rebuilt Sea Furies, and I was told it was all back cavalry. That was how you got on a horse, that was how you got on your airplane.
And it's shaped like a stirrup. That's exactly what it looks
and
like.
And same with the rudder pedals. They have leather stirrups inside.
Yeah.
So I guess when you're fighting in big boots, you can move the rudder pedal around.
So it's got that. There's the gear and flap retraction system in this airplane looks like a Hurst shifter. It's got a neutral and it's got a select switch, and then you can put the gear up or you can come back and put the gear down, or you can go back to neutral when you're done, and you can put the flaps down or you can put the flaps up, all conveniently located in one place on the other side of the cockpit from the throttle, so you have to switch hands as you're taking off and doing things and you're moving stuff around. It's just a different way of building an airplane, and it's an antique. It's an old airplane, and it had old ways of doing things. They hadn't, you know, the P-51's like flying a modern airplane when you fly it. Everything's in a nice place.
And that was, not to pick on the British, but if the Americans figured out you could do it with one bolt, one washer, one nut, the British, three bolts, six washers, three nuts, and then they staked the nuts so that when the poor guy tried to take him off next time, he had to use some kind of crowbar.
How much weight savings do you think between were saved by using this fabric? You have any idea? How about it, Ray?
I don't think there's any real saving in weight.
With a British accent, you could say anything and we'll believe it.
Yeah.
it was nothing to do with weight saving. It was just the technology they had.
Although, wouldn't you say, a Hurricane's pretty light. You said it's 5,800 pounds.
It is. It's 5,800 pounds.
And when you watch the airplane take off, it's amazing how fast it gets in the air compared to this airplane. Well, it's got a fat wing, yeah, but it's also pretty light. It accelerates good and everything. And I think it's probably 600 or 800 pounds lighter than the Spitfire. So...
Well, was there any? I had read that there was an advantage to that was that the fabric construction was it could be repaired very easily during the Battle of Britain. They could ride a sortie and come down and stack a patch on it, and they'd go right back up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as long as it hadn't hit anything structurally, you just slap a fabric patch on it.
Okay.
And that would be it.
Well, tell me about what significance of this particular paint job on this airplane. And we'll talk about this one in a little bit.
So this Spitfire was built at Castle Bromwich in March of 1944. It flew 74 missions in World War II. It flew with the Polish Volunteers, 302nd and 303rd. And then it was transferred to the Free French. This paint job is as it was flown by a French airman that was still alive while Rayburn Thompson was rebuilding the airplane, and the guy actually painted a painting of it after the war, and Rayburn used that for the paint scheme on this airplane. It flew over the beaches of Normandy on D-Day plus 7 or 9, I can't remember which one, D-Day plus 9 I think it was. So extremely significant airframe. It went on to be used through the end of the war and then transferred to the Dutch Air Force, and it was a gate guard at an officer's club in the Netherlands when Rayburn recovered it and brought it back to the United States and rebuilt the airplane.